Beware, spoiler phobes. It's a new year on A Storm of Spoilers. Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my resolution for 2018 is to not fall down, which means I could not get off my own 2 feet. I could not get off my own 2 feet without meaning to be like sitting down, kneeling. I don't want to fall down. Don't fall down. Don't fall down 2018.
I have really a lot of hashtag don't fall down 2018. Great hashtag. I have a lot of follow-up questions. But first, I will say that I'm Joanna Robinson. My resolution is a really like boring, ordinary one, which is that I'm just going to declare it publicly so you guys can hold me to it. I am giving up gluten for once and for all in 2018.
Yes, gluten.
It has been 48 hours since I had my last gluten. That means, yes, I did have some on the first technically. But after that, I have been resolute. So.
My proofing bowl is shrieking right now my kitchen.
I could hear the shrieking of the proofing bowl. All right.
I have a lot of follow-up questions, too, about a proofing bowl. Anyway, I'm Neil Miller, and my 2018 resolution is that I am no longer going to get lost in the noise of everything, the noise of politics and pop culture, and it's going to be all signal for me this year. So I'm going to be focusing my energy on, you know, political conversations that include original reporting and pop culture that actually matters to me. So
yeah,
I'm done with all the extra crap.
That dovetails into my my other resolution, which is I have a couple, but another one is don't get in a single Twitter fight in 2018.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Oh, well, yeah, now that you've laughed at me, it's definitely happening.
I feel like that's not a resolution for you. That's a challenge for me.
To fight me?
Can I start a fight with Joanna in 2018 on Twitter?
You can try, well, see, here's the thing. I'll just she's like, not wait gonna... till I see you in person to fight you. So, you know.
Oh,
she's like saving them all up. It's like a charged attack. That's not good. I don't know if that's healthy for anybody.
Let's go back in time and talk about a couple things about our friend Dave Gonzalez. Really quickly. Number one, Dave.
Okay. Yeah.
And this is Storm of Spoilers? I don't know. Do you want to get
that out
first?
Yeah, this is Storm of Spoilers. We're doing our 2018 Survival Guide mailbag. We have some questions from you. We have some television and movies we're looking forward to. That's after our 2 segments reviews, and we talked about this already. But first, Joanna, go ahead.
Well, I'm not surprised about the Proving Bowl because... I know you're a secret baker or a not so secret baker. Like, I know this about you. I don't know how Neil hasn't picked this up because, like, often when we're finishing, you're like, oh, my tarts or something like that. So,
yeah, I've never picked literally 0% of this is making any sense to me.
Yeah, he's like always making pies and cobblers and shit. So, okay, so I know this about Dave. I want to know more about how often you fall down, like, to the extent that it needs to be a resolution that you won't do it anymore.
This is actually an old resolution I used to have with my high school buddies that we would attempt to all have the resolution not to fall down. And it was more about how we could all go into the year before we fell down. And once it becomes your New Year's resolution, you become super aware of how much you fall down. So it's not that I fall down a lot. It's just since having done this resolution at a young age, I'm hyper aware when I do fall down.
This reminds me of every year when my friend and I used to go to the Sundance Film Festival in Park City. Like, I grew up in California. I never grew up around snow or ice or anything like that. And so every year when we would go to Park City, I would, like, walk around, like, with my ass clenched basically in fear of falling down because I was just like, there's just so much ice and I'm just so unused to it and blah, blah, blah. And so my aunt who lives in Park City, she was like, you know, you should just fall intentionally to get it out of the way. And then you won't be so scared. I think she told me that my second year would have been helpful my first year. And once
that's one way to look at it, but not to overscare you. But falling down is like a risk that you take that is only benefited by how young and healthy you are. The older and unhealthier you get, it becomes, at some cases, life-threatening once you get 80 plus years to just fall down. So yeah. I'm not sure there's ever a good time to encourage falling down.
I was like in my 20s and very healthy. Like, yeah, I wasn't like, it's, I wouldn't like just tell an 80-year-old, well, you know what you should do when you go to Park City? Just fling yourself on the ice as hard as you can.
Just try like a baseball slide.
But I would, I mean, I didn't actually ever fall down intentionally, but what was true is that after I got my first fall out of the way, because I was, I fell, I would say like probably once or twice a visit. And once you fall, though, you just kind of like lose your fear about it, because I do remember my very first fall at Park City, Utah. This is the content that people tuned in for, right? My very first fall at Park City in Park City, Utah was in the back alley of the movie theater because we were working as festival volunteers, where I was throwing out the trash. So I definitely like fell in the alley where the dumpsters were. So the ice there was probably not like pure of trash juice. And it was just like the worst fall, but nobody saw me do it. And so it was the best fall because it just happened and then it was done. And then I told people I did it, but they didn't have to see me do it. And then it was over. So,
well, that's great because I'm going to Sundance in 2 weeks and now I can't think of anything but falling.
Yay. So. All right.
Yay. Awesome. It's going to make you more cautious. You're good. No, it's good. We did Neil a favor.
I'm 100% going to walk around with my ass clenched the whole week. I've been there like 8 times and I've never thought about it before.
Everyone's going to be like, hurry up, Neil. We're going to be like late back in the line. And Neil's like, not worth the risk to my safety. I will shuffle along. Thank you very much.
There is some old photo of me, and I'll see if I can find it, of like my friend and I. Like, there was one incline in Park. Well, there's several inclines in Park City. Like, basically, downtown is all inclines. But there's one hill where like there's a chain link fence on the side of the sidewalk. And it just had like one of those caution signs. It was just some dude falling because of ice. And like a ten cuidado, piso mojado, like caution, wet floor sign. Except it was just like for existence in Park City. There's definitely a photo of both of us like posing next to it as if we're falling. So I'll see if I can find this proof of my fear of falling on the ice in Park City when I was a kid. Should I read some reviews?
Read some reviews, but also contemplate adding Don't Fall 2018 to your resolutions list.
Hashtag Don't Fall 2018. I really like it. I'm for it. All right. I am going to read two reviews, both by people using Direwolf as their name. So it's almost like this is a Game of Thrones podcast. The first...
The reviews in the north. Sorry.
What? Someone was writing about Sophie Turner, like, lashing out at Logan Paul on Twitter the other day and called her the Queen of the North in their write-up. I was like, I think it's Queen in the North. I'm just going to say that. All right. Anyway, Direwolf 09. This is one of the last 2017 reviews before I read our first 2018 review. But Direwolf 09, this is a pleasing to Dave review, which is one that does not necessarily agree with us, but nonetheless gave us 5 stars.
Yes, I'm listening.
My favorite podcast, 5 stars. I enjoyed the podcast on The Last Jedi, although I disagreed completely with you, except with Joanna about the Praetorian Guard's sexy armor, which reminded me of Dracula's armor. I know exactly what you're talking about, Direwolf 09. I was disappointed with Last Jedi. It was okay, not great. Keep up the great work. May you and your families have a blessed and peaceful holiday season. Thank you so much, Direwolf 09. I should also say that we did get a couple emails. We're probably not going to dive into it today, but we did get a couple emails from people. Like, I barely remember myself that I put a call out for like conservative listeners to write in, and we got like several people writing in, and that made me heartened that, you know, as we talk about resolutions going to 2018, it does like sort of lift my spirits, this idea that we can be very honest and forthright about our political opinions and still have people who really disagree with us about politics but just want to talk about pop culture still listen to this podcast. So that made me happy. Thank you all for writing in with those. All right, and lastly, Direwolf Wannabe, January 2nd, 2018, 5 stars, classic. And Dave will appreciate this because it starts with a Jane Austen quote. It's a truth universally acknowledged that a girlfriend in possession of a 37-minute commute to see her boyfriend must be in want of a podcast. I joined the Storm of Spoilers listener pool way too late at the end of season 7, but don't know how I survived any kind of commute before this podcast. I look forward to this pod each and every weekend, and might just love the off-season tour just as much as in-season episodes. Joanna, Neil, and Dave all bring wonderful, endearing insights to the show and are responsible for 90% of my day-to-day references. Keep up this sweet, sweet perfection. Thanks so much, Direwolf wannabe. And thanks for that little bit of Jane Austen.
I hope that you become a direwolf someday, direwolf wannabe.
Yeah, I believe in you, direwolf wannabe.
Yeah, you can do it.
And good luck with
which
your...
part was the Jane Austen quote? The podcast part?
It's a truth. Are you being sarcastic?
Partially, in the sense that I know it's not about the podcast.
I think it was the first part of the first sentence before the commute thing.
Did commute tip you off?
I don't think Jane Austen wrote about long commutes.
There's a lot of, I'm sure, long. What else to do in the countryside if not travel to visit wealthy people's houses?
That's true. Definitely. Right story, right? When Elizabeth Bennet would walk all the way to the neighboring estate, she would definitely listen to Storm of Stoilers off-season tour. A very famous Jane Austen quote is, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife." That is some. It's the opening line of Pride and Prejudice. It is a great example of her satirical tone. Let's hear from Neil.
Yay!
Oh, okay. good transition.
Okay. We talked about this already. Edition 1 in 2018. I have two things. One is Game of Thrones related. The other is related to the law. So the first thing is that Con of Thrones is rapidly approaching. I saw in an email from the folks at Con of Thrones, because I'm on their mailing list, because I'm a cool person, that ticket prices are going up at the end of January, right?
Oh,
yeah, so at the end of January, the early bird prices go away. So if you still have not gotten your Con of Thrones ticket, get your ticket before this month is over, or you're going to pay more, as I understand it. So that's important. Also, 2 days ago, as of this recording, Texas finally went through with the only thing that the Texas government has ever done that I have kind of enjoyed, which is swords are now open carry in Texas. So, like, real swords, not like my foam sword. We could actually buy real swords and carry them wherever we want during Con of Thrones. I feel like this is going to end poorly, but I'm excited to see how it ends poorly.
Now my only problem is flying my sword. It's getting my sword to Texas. But once I'm in Texas, swords out.
You could FedEx it to me.
Ooh, I could, yeah. Swords out for Harambe.
Yeah.
How many years ago was that? I feel like that was yesterday.
What's a Harambe anymore?
Oh, what's a Harambe
We've come
anymore?
So far.
Hashtag don't fall to 2018.
Hashtag don't fall.
Swords out for Con of Thrones.
Swords out for Harambe? I don't know if we want to kick that.
No, I don't want anything to do with Harambe, but swords out for Con of Thrones. Hashtag swords out for Con of Thrones. Hashtag League of Swords.
Got it.
League of Swords.
Swords are now league here in Texas. Okay, so that's number one. Get on the Con of Thrones thing. We've been bantering about on Twitter lately with some of our favorite Con of Thrones people, and it's going to be super fun, and I'll be there. And Dave and Joanna will be there, too.
We should say, I mean, like, this is just a truth that you can independently verify, but several people who we met for the first time last year, like, at the end of year, we're all looking back on the year, several people who are smart and fun and do smart and fun things said Con of Thrones is their very favorite thing they did in 2017. So you don't
specifically
have to take our word for it.
Meeting me was the highlight. So
just want to throw so you definitely want to get that on the schedule.
Yeah. Right. And I'm eating healthy now. So I'm going to be maybe by May very fit and completely insufferable. So
hashtag swords out for Deal Miller.
Yeah. So I'm just approaching it differently this year than I was last year. Okay. Still working out the strategy. Anyway, back to Game of Thrones news, actual Game of Thrones that they are filming. It is. It was very sad this week, I will say, publishing lists of most anticipated TV shows of 2018 and not putting Game of Thrones on there because Game of Thrones is not coming back this year. But there are two things that are coming back to Game of Thrones when it comes back. And that is the actors who played Alice Karstark and Ned Umber, the two child actors from season 7, who were pardoned by Jon Snow, much to the chagrin of the queen in Dunorf. Sansa. That was, I'm talking about Sansa. Like, do you guys even remember Game of Thrones? That was so long ago. Anyway.
What if season 8 starts, opens with Ned and Alice's heads on pikes over Winterfell? Sansa put them there.
I mean, ballsy move.
Swords out for Sansa Stark 2018. You're going to be like, you're going to really regret bringing swords out into the lexicon in this episode.
Yes.
Aren't these potential like wedding partners for people that Starks that aren't going to want to marry them?
Yeah, I feel like the political reality of what's going on in the north in Westeros is that they need those kids alive at this point. Jon needed to kill them immediately. Or they're stuck with them at this point.
Right. They got to marry them off to other houses to solidify.
That? Oh, are you thinking about Tormund? Possibly. I feel like there's going to be no time for any Alice and or Ned based hijinks. And so like just like it was last season, they will have 2 lines max. That's my prediction. My deeply unfun prediction for season 8 of Game of Thrones, which is over a year from now.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like that's all we can really say at this point is that they're coming back. I do enjoy, if you guys get a chance, I might start picking up quotes from the actors because they can't say anything, but they are saying things that are hilarious, even in context.
Ooh, like, yes, please make that a regular feature.
Yes, like Kit Harington this week said that getting to the end of Game of Thrones was really quite emotional, like in the least emotional way he communicated that he's very emotional about the end of Game of Thrones, which is the most Kit Harington / Jon Snow way to do anything.
I'm also getting married this year. You might have heard about it.
Really very emotional about that too. Very excited. Just a year of emotion.
Married the love of my life, and the show's gonna be over. It's gonna be great. I don't know why he's Welsh all of a sudden. All right.
It's gonna have to do what was that stupid Sword and Sandals movie he did, Pompeii? They have to do Pompeii 2.
Yeah, with 2 eyes. That's how we know
that
it's
was
2.
My joke. Ugh.
God, it's the Jumanji reality that we're all living, that it was mistitled and doing this well at the box office. Should have been Tumanji or Jumanji with 2 eyes. I go on record, lost opportunity, but it's doing fine.
Yeah, Tumanji too furious. I get it.
Yeah, see, there you go.
But Jumon 3 is definitely happening.
Right? Oh, for sure.
That's
it great. Better. This time it'll be a VR game. yeah. I guess this is as good a place as any to start talking about 2018. Big year in media coming up, as we've been talking about a year without Game of Thrones. We are, of course, a Game of Thrones podcast that is now embarking on our longest ever off-season. This is, I guess, a new experience for Neil and I, but Joanna and I did a Legend of Korra podcast where it would be years and then suddenly months in between seasons. So I feel like I'm ready to go with these two in a state of constant readiness for new Game of Thrones news. So I don't think we're going to be completely without episodes about Game of Thrones in this year. That would be ridiculous. But here are some other things we might talk about, starting with your questions. We're going to start with Rachel, who says, here's my question. WB finds itself in a really tough spot. Now that Justice League tanked at the box office, they can't just reboot because Wonder Woman was a hit and Aquaman is already in the can. What do you think is going to happen to the Arrow versus redheaded sibling that is the DCEU in 2018?
I have thoughts.
Go, Neil.
Well, first, I don't know if it's entirely fair to say that it tanked at the box office. It just fell below the very lofty
expectations.
Fell short
of expectations.
Yeah, I mean, tanking would be like it made like $20 million. So it still made a bunch of money. They're still feeling fairly good about where they're at. I think that they did get rid of, Jeff Johns and that other producer guy. I think the days of them trying to create, at least for a while, them trying to create sort of a cohesive universe out of these characters is probably over. Like, we're going to get Aquaman. If Aquaman goes well, we'll probably get another Aquaman. If Wonder Woman 2 goes well, we'll probably get another Wonder Woman. And I don't know. There's
at some point somebody will be Batman again,
right? You know, there's interesting ideas. There's Joss Whedon's Batgirl. There's the Flashpoint movie. If they can round these projects up and don't have to feel like they have to tie everything together perfectly, then I think they might be able to make some interesting movies. That said, I would like to see them put, as much as this worked so poorly with Zack Snyder, I would like to see them, you know, hand something off to a director and let them do what they want. Like, I think that was one of the huge problems with Suicide Squad, is it does not sound like that's the movie David Ayer wanted to make. He wanted to make Bright.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I shouldn't interrupt you. You have so much faith that the movie that David Ayer wanted to make was going to be good. But
well,
I see now you were setting up a punchline. Great.
I don't know if David Ayer would have made a good Suicide Squad movie, but I know he probably wanted to make a weird Suicide Squad movie.
Weirder,
which
sure,
would have been more interesting than what we got. So,
Which was just a hot mess.
Yeah, I think they need to loosen up a little bit. They need to let go of the Affleck thing. Make a Nightwing movie. Who gives a shit? And then they need to have a real plan next time. But I do think they're going to ride out the characters that people like, which is The Flash, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman. So, I don't know. I think the real question is, are we going to see Henry Cavill as Superman again, and will he have a mustache?
Canonical mustache. Go back, put the mustache back in.
Right.
It can't be that hard. The movie.
Like, there's an undo function in Photoshop. I'm sure that exists for whoever took his mustache out in Justice League. Just hit undo, put that on the Blu-ray. That's the extended cut I want to see.
Super mustache.
Did we already talk about Jeff Johns and John Berg and what happened there?
I mentioned that they got fired. They didn't really get fired so much as they're not in charge anymore.
I mean, it's kind of fired.
Like, Jeff Johns still works at DC, right?
Yeah, but like, they were talking about all their big plans for the movie universe, and then Justice League bombed, and now they're no longer, like, after Wonder Woman, they give all these like triumphant interviews, and the Justice League bombed.
Oh, remember that special he did with Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that was funny. Here comes the future of like these movies.
That's a weird time capsule now.
So, like, basically, you know, as you mentioned, Neil, like, I think this is the really big seismic. I mean, they haven't been in charge of DC Films from the start, but, like, there is a vacuum here and a possibility of putting in someone. I don't know if anyone can quite be the Kevin Feige of DC Films, but, like, it would be great if
it's going to be
someone.
Kevin Feige.
Yes. You heard it here first. Disney has also purchased Warner Brothers, and now Kevin Feige is lord of all comic book movies. So,
I don't know. Some people would be okay with that.
Plenty of people would be okay with that. But we don't want to send Dave off on that rant right now. Not now. Not today.
Yeah. We have other triggers in here for Dave.
Sure. So point being, like, I'm eager. You know, they said that they might sort of announce their replacement as early as January, which is now. So I'm very interested to see who they might put in that position.
It's going
to
be Ben Affleck. Kevin Smith. You know what, though? Honestly, I have a story about Kevin Smith. First of all, I've been a big Kevin Smith fan all my life. He's kind of weird now, but I saw The Dark Knight with Kevin Smith. And,
did you hold hands?
He was Peter Serretta's plus one, Peter from Slash Film. And I saw it with Peter.
You guys are like triple beard bros.
Oh, it was very bearded. Yeah. But... like, I remember talking to him, and like, that's a guy who really understood the what Christopher Nolan was doing and how earnest it was, and he made references to how, like, it's maybe not something he could make, but he really kind of got what he was doing with the character. I'm not saying that this one conversation I had like 8 years ago or whatever makes Kevin Smith okay, but honestly, it can't get any worse. So, like, why not let Kevin Smith have a shot at it?
Great. Sure. All right. So, Neil is planting his flag on Kevin Smith. Dave, do you have a nominee to take over here?
To take over at the head of the DCEU.
I feel like everyone prior to last year would have said, give it to Jeff Johns. That guy knows what's up.
Yeah. I mean, it's... if I were a conspiracy theorist and if he didn't have a medical issue in December, I would have said that the timing of the Bendis move over to DC was very curious. Because I don't know if Bendis could handle the production level, but if Geoff Johns could have figured it out, Brian Michael Bendis could have figured it out. And he basically wrote the comic book version of what Marvel uses as the basis for its Marvel Cinematic Universe characters. And then he was also part of the Marvel Brain Trust that would help back in the Kevin Feige had to run things by the Marvel Brain Trust days. And I know that they didn't always make the best decisions because they had Ike Perlmutter also kind of pulling their strings. But I think that Bendis would be able to step in and at least course correct in a way that both comic book fans and people in the movie business who don't understand comic book fans would be able to understand. But he also had like some sort of freak infection in December, and now he's like wearing an eye patch, and so a lot of his work he was finishing up for Marvel got pushed back, so he's kind of two-handing DC and Marvel comic book work right now, so I don't think it would be good to suddenly put him in charge of a whole bunch of movies that are already on their way to coming out.
But for lack of a better option, are you going to plant your flag on Brian Michael Bendis, perhaps?
That'd be my vote if you don't do one of the Marissa Whedon.
Oh,
what's
no.
her actual last name?
Tancheron? Why?
Tancheron.
Why would you pick them?
Because they're green enough that you could push them around. I think that's been shown with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I think that there would be a sort of nerd credibility that I think they'd be reaching for there.
I think that's a terrible idea. Sorry, I like you so much. I think that's a terrible idea just because I just don't think what they did with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was ultimately successful. So
I don't think it was either, but it is in its fourth season, and it doesn't have to be. And it's been living after being cut loose from the MCU. So I would at least see an opportunity. If I didn't put Brian Michael Bendis in there, I'd want a woman in there, preferably a woman of color. And I think the only person that they would be able to shove in there and still feel like they'd have ample control over, because you know Warner Brothers isn't going to do what Neil wants and is going to want to make sure that all these things are clicking in place, that they would want someone they could control.
We'll
see. Maybe they should just give it to Patty Jenkins.
Great
just
idea.
Dump truck full of money in front of Patty Jenkins' house.
Well, it'd have to be a dump truck full of money and a ton of free comic books, right? Because you gotta embed some credibility into somebody somehow.
That's true.
Like you can't put some movie executive, some like independent film executive in and top the DCEU and have people trust it.
You can't take like a Zack Snyder and just put him in charge.
Okay, so if we're going to talk about poaching people from Marvel, I would recommend poaching someone from Marvel Studios. And I would say take either Louis Desposito or Victoria Alonso, who are like Kevin Feige's second in command. So they know everything that Kevin has done to like make the magic work over there. Take Victoria fucking Alonso. She's great. She's so smart. She knows everything. Just put her in charge. And then she and Kevin can be like friends who run the two big, you know, comic book studios together. It would be great. So that's my vote, Victoria Alonso.
I like that better than my answer, but to be fair, it sounds like you've thought about it more.
I started thinking about it
when I asked the question. I was like, when I asked you guys the question, I was like, who would work? And I'm like, well, what's the closest thing to a Kevin Feige? And I'm like, oh. I mean, I think a lot of us thought Geoff Johns was kind of the closest thing because they like came up in the industry together. They were like similarly geeky, like, you know, nerdy white guys or whatever, get all of that. But I'm like, but you know what? Like, Jeff didn't get it in the way that Kevin got it for some reason. And Victoria has just been like working lockstep with Kevin for so long that like that makes a lot of sense to me. Plus she's a rad lady. Cool. Next email?
Yes.
Sure.
Now that we've solved the TCU.
I like that.
Now that we know
front.
What's up with that.
Yeah. We don't ever have to talk about it again now.
Great, great.
I think everything else gets a little deeper from here on out. This one's from Rita. I love, this is, I think, the second question of two questions, but this one's cooler. I love many fandoms, currently wearing Harry Potter socks with Wonder Woman pajamas and drinking out of a Star Wars mug. And I tell my nerdy 7 and 9 year old kids all the time that being a geek is cool. But what used to be considered genre or niche has become so mainstream over the last decade. And 2018 is going to be so front loaded with superhero fantasy and sci-fi. I wonder if we are at a tipping point. If a plurality of films like Solo, Infinity War, Black Panther, A Wrinkle in Time, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Ready Player One, Ant-Man and the Wasp, etc., underwhelm, what's the pop cultural and creative business fallout? I hope oversaturation and subpar execution don't make a liar out of me as far as my kids' coolness factor is concerned.
Can I jump on this? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I will say, you know, spoiler alert for later in the episode, but we're going to talk about some of the things that we're looking forward to in 2018. And I will confess that when it came to like sort of skimming through other people's collected lists of movies that are coming out, I just kind of breezed past all of the comic book movies, not because I agree with, what was it, Jodie Foster, with anyone, Jodie Foster or otherwise, who wants to like trash the superhero genre or the comic book or genre, or like, I feel like we're at necessarily a saturation point. But I was just sort of like, well, when I look back at the movies that it was really, really fun to talk to you guys and our listeners about these comic book, these genre movies. But when I look back at the movies last year and the year before that really stuck with me, they were these like small 824 movies like Moonlight or Lady Bird or Call Me By Your Name, et cetera. And so like those were kind of more the films that I was trying to find. And I don't know that I was necessarily succeeded, but like that's what has stuck with me film wise. As much as I share Rita's fondness for genre or fandoms and that sort of thing. So that's something that I've been thinking about too. Like if there's a personal saturation point for me, it's not to say that I won't get excited for and go to every comic book movie, that I won't want to talk about it with you guys and that sort of stuff. That I won't hope that that like Johnny Depp somehow dies in the first 3 minutes of Fantastic Beasts or becomes Eva Green or something like that, and then the franchise is
oh my
better.
God.
Right? Blew too sexy. Your mind in 2 seconds. Hashtag swords up for Eva Green. So you know, like I'm definitely still myself and a fan of genre and franchise filmmaking and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of what really has been digging into me, it's been these other movies. And so that's, you know, that's something that I am thinking about as well right now, Rita. Thank you for asking.
You know what, though? That is an excellent point, because my answer to this question is similar, but from a different angle, I think. One, because it is true, like the mainstream, the niche culture that was being a geek or a nerd or, you know, someone who's into sci-fi and comics, that is now mainstream. So they came and they took that. And now it exists in a very massive scale, which means you got to work a little harder. You got to go and find the really interesting stuff. Like, there were a lot of really good genre films last year and TV shows and stuff that we've talked about on this podcast and stuff that we haven't, that you go and you find the really brilliant stuff. Like, I think of Marvel Cinematic Universe as like a comfort blanket. It's like, it's there a couple times a year. They're comfortable, easy movies to like. Yeah. And it's, those are movies that I can discuss. I can use those movies to get into comic books and other cool stuff with people who aren't really into it as much as I would be. But you know, for your own personal enjoyment, you kind of have to go deeper. You know, think about all the great like sci-fi movies, like The Shape of Water. There's this really great movie called Thelma that is showing up on a lot of end of year lists. That's like this sci-fi psychological thriller. You know, even movies like Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, which we talked about on the show earlier. There's just a lot of great stuff out there that's sort of second tier that I think you can still feel, because that was always the thing about like being a geek, is you know about stuff that other people don't know about, because it's like a OG hipster stuff where it's like, I read comics in depth, so I know more about Spider-Man than you.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't turn
it's hard to do now.
Yeah, well, as long as it doesn't turn into gatekeeping, like you're not allowed to enjoy this because you don't know all the spider facts.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Like, it's really fun to go nerdy deep.
It's fun to go deep, and it's fun to find things. It's fun to be able to introduce people to things.
Oh, I love
think that's
that.
Another
yeah.
thing.
And that's
that
kind of what
is part of it.
Yeah, and I, that's how I feel about these. Not that like I'm the only one who likes these. Like, what is this Ladybird or Moonlight that won Best Picture that you speak of, Joanna? Like, I know that I'm not like,
who is this Greta Gerwig that no one's heard of before?
And I'm not talking about like super niche stuff, but it's still like it, I get really excited when I can show someone Moonlight who hasn't seen it or something like that. So I agree that it's really fun to like discover something with someone, which is not going to happen with the Marvel Cinematic Universe or anything like that. Yeah.
It's like when some basic ass person comes over to my house and they're like, I've never seen John Wick. And I'm like, excuse you? Cancel all your plans.
But then there are a lot of people like, well, and that's a sidebar that we don't have time for. But it is interesting. Like, I guess you do have to go like one layer deeper than those fandoms. But, and I'll say this with love. I don't know how to say it without.
You don't have to say it with love.
Well, a phrase that
this isn't Twitter.
Well, a phrase that I really hate, like it always like raises my hackles, is when someone goes, "Oh, I'm just such a nerd," or "I'm really nerdy," and like there's just a tone of saying it. So it's not everyone who identifies this way, but there's a tone of saying it that is almost like self-congratulatory for some reason. And I do want to say, like, being a nerd is the most mainstream thing you can be these days. So I don't know.
So you got to go next level nerd.
This is me like live working out my whole issue around this that I've had for a couple years now. Anyway, Dave, do you have any spider facts you want to lay on us and or thoughts on the state of genre?
Oh, just gonna out the subtle call outs to Dave as being just directly about me. I was not policing people with my spider facts.
See, I told you we had plenty of Dave triggers in this episode.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about this from the perspective of somebody who's talking to their 7 and 9 year old kids about liking stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're at a tipping point for them, even with a list of all those things. And it seems like a lot for us because my time was like going to college and we had new Star Wars movies, which we didn't think we were going to have. They were the prequels, but they were still new Star Wars movies, so it didn't like really matter. And we were getting superheroes that I had been reading about and seeing like weird TV or cartoon versions of on the big screen, and suddenly being treated like Jaws or Terminator 2 or some of these other like huge blockbusters,
right,
that I'd been introduced as key blockbusters. Now there's just so many of them. I don't think it's that intense high. So it's like everyone turns out for Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, who's a Spider-Man fan, whether it's good or bad. And you might think like the Green Goblin looks like a Power Ranger villain, but you like it because Spider-Man made it to screen. People have been trying for years and it didn't like completely suck. And Tobey Maguire was good. And so then you're like, oh shit. Now we're in the days like two Spider-Men later. Where you're going to be getting constantly a new Spider-Man story or a new Batman story or a new installment in things that are successful. So it's like all these finite fandoms that we used to have, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, to a certain extent, for younger people than me. What used to be everybody stewing in a fandom and only having certain things to debate about, but like once you passed a gatekeeper position, if there were gatekeepers, you were like in, you know, once you'd seen the time travel episodes of Star Trek, you could get into an argument with Trekkers or Trekkies, whatever they wanted to be called at the time period, about time travel episodes of Star Trek. Now I think that pool is just much bigger. So you have all the same assholes and everything, but there are more. There are more points to get in and there are more places of commonality. And if it's going to be things like movies that are huge in the summer, I think that's so much better than CG animated Netflix shows for your kids or all the content that's being made or directed at tweens that's like watching other people play video games. Like, I don't think that those are needless points. I don't think that your kids should be like banned from that, but that's like lesser pop culture than what's being offered out there, and what's being offered out there is giving them opportunities to interact with their peers. So I think it's still cool to be a geek, even if everything fails and all those movies we just listed was bad, because the cool thing about being a geek is you get to talk about how it was bad with like-minded people, and there are more like-minded people than there ever were before for these particular properties.
I think it's really...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I don't know why the words nerd and geek are so, done for me. I don't know, why I have such a problem with those words.
I'm just not into labels anymore.
Well, but the word I do like is weird. I do like sort of embracing your weirdness, because that can mean literally anything that you are super into, that you're into, not just because everyone's into it, but because it genuinely fascinates you, you know? And so I really do embrace and support everyone to follow their weirdness. But it's this, I don't know. There's just so many things that are branded with the word geek, and proudly branded with the word geek and nerd now, that it's hard. I don't know. I never mind. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Follow your weirdness, except if your weirdness is watching Logan Paul videos. Ban that guy. Anyway, no, Dave, you made an excellent point about the kids. I didn't really consider that when I was answering this question. But, you know, when you think about kids, I guess we think about kids nowadays as their worlds are bigger than ours were when we were young, because of the internet and Twitch and all the, you know, social media that they can access. But their worlds are still pretty small. Kids are never going to run out of stuff that they think is awesome. So you could go and get your two kids a copy of A Wrinkle in Time and have them read it now, and they can have that same experience of reading the book and going to the movie that I had with Jurassic Park in the 90s. So it feels saturated for us, but man, I don't think that's the same for kids.
Yeah, and the same thing is true of I don't see, you know, you want your kids to be socially fluent, so you want them to I was kind of weird at school because I didn't watch the TV shows that other kids watch and stuff like that, and that, you know, so I couldn't talk to anyone about 90210 or whatever it was. But you don't want to inoculate your child to the mainstream entirely, but don't be afraid to really spend time showing your kid older stuff, stuff that you loved or stuff that even your parents loved. You know, kids are very open and spongy and receptive to that kind of thing when they're little, and they don't know that how deeply uncool it is to watch something so old, and then they turn out to be cooler people. So this is the last bit of parenting advice that I, someone who does not have children, am going to give you. So yep. There you go.
All right.
Our zero keeping kids combined. Solving parenthood.
Yes.
Solving parent problems. keeping it in the, I guess, meta commentary about 2018, this question from someone who the name on the email was Brushy Sunshine, so we'll...
She's the one who did the large Marge email. That was one of the best emails we've had, so...
Correct. Does the fact that there are so many sites, podcasts, etc., devoted to niche culture and obsessive speculation that it will become increasingly hard for creators to tell stories without strong and intense backlash like we saw with The Last Jedi? Does obsessing about something for years that doesn't exist yet curdle us? Is the imagined book that George R. R. Martin will write so great in our minds that whatever he actually writes will be a letdown, because reality is always imperfect, but the imagined can be pure and unblemished? Do we care too much now, in a way? How many cantos can a canto bite if a canto bite could bite cantos?
Oh, God, this is deep.
As part of my resolution not to get involved in a Twitter fight in 2018, I want to say right at the start here that it is absolutely okay if you did not like The Last Jedi. That is a fine opinion to have.
Having said that...
You are still a good person. Having said that, the shit I saw that happened around The Last Jedi makes me really worried for fandom in general. and the echo chamber of all of it. So, yeah, I worry about that a lot. But, you know, once again, that's not to say that if you, an individual listening, did not like The Last Jedi, it makes you a bad person. But I think some of the groupthink that was going on, not everyone who doesn't like The Last Jedi is like, you know, a sheep that just follows the herd. But there is like, it's a, I noticed it most with Ghostbusters. Okay, so like, We get you know, those of us recording this podcast and who listen to pop culture podcasts get a warped perception of pop culture because we're just like kind of too much in it. But there are people who are more casual watchers, listeners, whatever. And I was talking to a couple of them before the sort of all-female Ghostbusters movie came out, and I would not have called them misogynist in any way. They're good friends of mine, in fact. But what I heard them do, and I know that they're not like deep in the Twitter sphere or whatever, I heard them repeat back certain like codified talking points of why this movie is a bad movie, not having seen the movie. You know what I mean? And I was just sort of like, I feel like less and less people are going to the movies and making their, forming their own opinions. And this just has to do with people less and less just going to the movies at all. And you know, okay, here's what I'll say. I don't care what your opinion is, as long as it's your opinion. That's what I would most advocate in 2018 is, I mean, don't listen to us.
Whoa.
Listen to yourself.
I don't know about that.
No, you can like take our advice. So, like if you find that you agree with, I mean,
here, I have a good, but, like, I have a good thought on this.
Yeah, dig me out of this. Thanks.
Well, it goes back to, and you're right. It goes back to my 2018 resolution, which is don't fall into the noise. So, like, all that stuff is noise. All those talking points, all those people who hate movies and rally people to give one-star reviews on IMDb without seeing it. Like, I always say this to people about film criticism. Whenever someone tells me that, like, film critics, like, together as a cabal are don't know what they're talking about or whatever, I'm like, that's not what it's for. Like, that's not what these pop culture sites and podcasts, like, the key is find somebody you like whose communication style works for you, regardless of their opinions, somebody you enjoy reading or listening to, which I think is probably the reason why you're listening to a podcast like this, and engage.
If you made it through Don't Fall 2018, thanks for sticking with us.
And engage with that signal. And stay away from the rest of the noise. Like, don't worry about the people. Like, because I will say this: if I see somebody on the internet who @s me on Twitter with some nonsense, you know, about all female Ghostbusters, to use your example, I don't care about that person. But if someone I know who is a friend of mine said that, I would immediately want to talk to them about it. I'd be like, "Hey, well, did you see it? What did you know? If you did, what did you think? If you haven't, why do you think that?" Focus on the people you care about, I think. That's like number one this year is don't let people who don't matter have power over you, especially in the world of pop culture. It goes for politics too, but you know, there are certain people who are worth listening to and engaging with, and then there's just a lot of junk.
Yeah, that falls in my other resolution, which I didn't state, but is super specific, but also true, which is never read another change.org petition about pop culture again.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's like, you don't have to watch bad TV. You don't have to read change.org petitions.
But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I agree with you, Neil. And this is something that I think I was trying to talk about around the Last Jedi thing and sort of the Rotten Tomatoes phenomenon is really you should. I agree. Okay. You should find people because you're busy. You've got commutes to make and long distance boyfriends to see and whatever it is. But like,
and rich man's homes to walk to if you're in Jane Austen.
Nailed it, buddy. You nailed it. So you don't have time to see everything. And that's purportedly our job is to see as much as we can and talk to, and like tell you what we think you'll like and what we think you won't. You should find people like us, and that includes people you agree with and people you don't agree with, but like you respect what they have to say. You don't agree with them, but like you understand where they're coming from and like the pressure points of your disagreement. So you could be like, I definitely talked about this online. I think I might have talked about it on the podcast, but like my sister and I grew up reading the San Francisco Chronicle. the chief film critic there then, who's still the chief film critic but doesn't listen to this podcast, we disagree with everything he said, always. And so I was like, whatever he said, we would do the opposite. So he's like, this is a crap movie. We'd be like, great, we're going to love this movie. And that was that. And so, yeah, that would be my recommendation for how to navigate the like toxic fandom waters that are with increasing noise, as Neil rightly put it.
Yeah. Hashtag 2018, not every opinion matters.
But that's the idea of social media, is the idea that every opinion matters. And so like, I don't want to be elitist in, I don't want to be elitist in any way, but like, you know,
with social media, you just have better access to more cool people. You just kind of have to filter out the ones that suck.
Dave, what are your thoughts on this?
99 cantos, because that's how many there are in Dante's Inferno.
Hey, I mean, we answered the whole question.
That's better than a spider fact. So
I think we answered all the questions.
One from Josh really super quickly.
Sure. Okay. Do you want me to read it too?
Sure. You want to.
All right, this is from Josh from Indianapolis. This first question is probably for Joanna. I haven't read the book Annihilation or watched the trailer for the film, but I hear the movie and book seem quite different. Would you recommend I read the book before the movie comes out and achieve smug book reader status, or wait until after since there are so many changes? Second question, I'm actually excited for New Mutants and very meh for X-Men Dark Phoenix, but should I care at all about these movies with the upcoming Marvel merger on the horizon?
I'm gonna answer the first question really quickly, which is I always recommend reading the book first, even if it's going to be very different from the finished product, which I believe Annihilation will be. But just go in with an open mind. Like I don't see a point of reading a book and then just like holding on tight to your interpretation of it, and that's the only good interpretation that there can be. So if you're okay with that, like if that's not gonna get in your way, I always advocate smug book readership. So. That's my first answer. The second one, I think either Dave or Neil will be more qualified to answer.
I would say stay excited for the X-Men movies you are excited for, because Disney will pay attention to how well they do as they take a look around at what they have. I would not be surprised if Simon Kinberg moved with the property. I mean, he's basically been tied to X-Men for the majority of his career for the past decade, so if X-Men Dark Phoenix, his directorial debut, shows that he can rescue the franchise like Matthew Vaughn did before him, maybe he could keep doing what he's doing, just under different money. It's just money in the end.
Yeah, I think it's it would be short-sighted to assume that Disney's going to want to change everything about what Fox has done, especially with their superhero stuff. They may try to do some new things, but I think if it's working, like if Deadpool 2 is really successful, I think they'll probably make a Deadpool 3 that's R-rated and one of those things that people would be like, no, not Disney. Yeah, I think they'd probably still do that, because you know what Disney likes? They like money. They like things that are successful, and they like the things that people like. So yeah, stay excited. Why not? New Mutants looks dope.
Yeah, if they could do scary, if they decide 20th Century Fox is their adult superhero offshoot label, why not? Weirder things have happened, but we'll see how the properties shake out. The important thing is if you like New Mutants, or if you're forming opinions about X-Men Dark Phoenix, those are still completely valid, even though properties are changing hands.
They will
things
be
don't move
real
that
movies
fast.
At some point.
They will. All right, last question. This is from Emilio from Puerto Rico. Just wondering what the thing you're most curious about in 2018 pop culture, not necessarily most excited about, but something that makes you go, huh, every time you say it. Thanks to the pod, excited for next year's Storm of Spoilers.
I'm ready.
So what makes you go, huh? Okay, Joanna, do it.
Things that make you go, huh? The idea that Martin Scorsese is making a film called The Irishman, starring, you know, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Al Pacino, blah, 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 Bobby Cannavale, Ray Romano, Harvey Keitel.
None of whom are Irish.
That's not the point. But it all sounds like, and it, you know, it's like, it's a period piece and it's about organized crime. Like, we know, we feel like we know exactly what to expect from this. But every time I get, like, excited about this, I think about the fact that Robert De Niro is playing this one real life character, Frank the Irishman Sheeran, all throughout his life. So De Niro will also be playing, he'll appear as young as 30 years old in the movie. So this is like some Grand Moff Tarkin CGI bullshit that's going to happen on top of like a classic Scorsese movie. So I am fascinated to see where and when the rubber meets the road on this one. It's a thing that makes me go, huh, in 2018.
Neil.
That was a good one. I don't know if... I don't know if I have a... I guess it really doesn't make me go, huh, but there are big storylines that, you know, we've been sort of looking at, and we've talked about a lot of them, which is how does the cinematic universe culture in Hollywood sort of blockbuster factories adapt and evolve? This pertains to Marvel, it pertains to DC. Everybody's kind of at a weird turning point now. Especially with like Disney just kind of swallowing things up. So I think that'll be interesting to watch, you know, from like a behind the scenes standpoint. Honestly, I don't know if there's anything that makes me go, huh, but I'm excited to see how our pop culture continues to evolve in our current cultural moment. You know, we did a list on Film School Rejects, shameless plug, of 81 movies directed by women that you can see this year in 2018. And there's some really interesting stuff on there. So, I mean, we got to keep fighting the fight. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that goes through 2018.
I'm going to say May 2018, the month, makes me go, huh. Because it starts with Avengers Infinity War.
Uh-huh.
And then ends with Solo's A Star Wars Story.
Huh.
Who knows if that actually going to happen. And then right in the middle, Sony Pictures decided to make a Slender Man movie. They released a trailer. They're not necessarily doing a pure Slender Man story, even though that's the IP they bought. They're doing a girl like gets possessed Slender story, which is loosely based, I guess, on the real stabbings. Or at least that's what the trailer makes it looks like, which is a really weird choice for your Slender Man movie when you buy a monster and then sort of use it to do a backdoor Law and Order episode with the spookiness. But, you know, hey, Sony Pictures, surely this is going to the beginning of a Slender Man universe of films. I bet that works out really well for you.
Slender Man, see you. I actually think I lied, because the thing that's making me go, huh, is one of the movies on Joanna's list for the next segment, so I'll save it.
All right. In that case, let's move on to some picks for 2018. We're going to pick our most anticipated films. We were supposed to just be doing someone cheated. And then we're each going to pick two most anticipated TV shows of 2018. Is it not cheating? Is it just more content? Is that...
It's just overachieving.
Honorable mentions, guys.
Oh. Fair enough. I guess it's an honor just to be nominated for some of Joanna's picks. Joanna, why don't you go first?
The first one I'm going to pick is Ocean's 8, which I was only sort of tepid on until I saw the trailer. And then I was like, oh my God, this looks so good. This is... not a remake, not a reboot, but sort of just another sequel, even though it has an earlier number, because...
it's like the Fear of the Walking Dead of
the Ocean's franchise. So, but yeah. Well, I don't think it's supposed to take place earlier than the Ocean's 11 films. But I hear
right.
what you're saying.
Is she like, isn't she like his cousin or something?
Sister. She's Danny Ocean's sister. Oh,
wow.
So, yeah, Sandra Bullock.
Never mentioned her before.
Is playing Debbie Ocean, Danny Ocean's sister. And a lot of the Ocean's 11 cast, or not a lot of, a handful of the Ocean's 11 cast is slated to be in this movie. But it's mostly a heist movie with rad-ass ladies. And the trailer got me so excited for the potential here. So, I mean, the Ocean's movies, at least the first two, are freaking incredible. Now listen. Director Gary Ross is no Steven Soderbergh, But still, I mean, like, I could just watch Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett dressed beautifully doing crimes till the end of time. So Ocean's 8, I'm beyond thrilled for it. I am worried about some of this noise stuff that we talked about before, because I'm already hearing it, with people inaccurately calling it an all-female reboot or remake, and I don't think that's quite what it is. I don't want this to drown in the Ghostbusters toxicity. Let's just take this movie for what it is, or try to anyway.
So. I think if Rihanna was in Ghostbusters, the fan counter reaction would have been much higher. I think the level of stardom, like, who's going to come after Kate Blanchett and Rihanna and walk away unscathed?
Yeah.
Beware.
First, yeah, I'd love Leslie to see him Jones, try that
and I
shit.
I said nothing, but come for Rihanna and you will be gonna.
All first, right. You came for Leslie Jones and we said your book is a poorly put together sham
and
of
we
a.
We got you banned forever from Twitter. All right.
So just, yeah, anyway. Neil.
Yes.
Most anticipated film of 2018. Hit us with one.
Oh, okay. These are equals in my mind. I thought you were going to make me pick one. But we'll start with the one that's coming up first, which is Black Panther. I think that movie's going to be amazing. Like, extremely dope. Ryan Coogler is a legitimately good director. It appears as if they are going to let him just kind of make the Black Panther movie that he wants to make. And the cast is insane. The fact that they're dumping it in February, doesn't matter. I think that movie is going to run away as like one of the highest grossing movies of the year. Because you know what? There's a lot of different Twitters that I frequent. But there is one that I love that has been waiting for this movie forever. And I think Black Twitter is going to show up, and I think Black Panther is going to be huge, and I think it's going to be worth it too. Like, it's going to be the Thor Ragnarok of this year, where it's like, damn, that was good as its own thing, even if it is part of a larger universe.
I need this movie to make like so much money at the box office. I really need that to happen.
Yeah, it's a similar situation as Wonder Woman last year. It's like, how do you not root for this movie to be really good and really successful? Because, you know, there's a part of our society that has not seen themselves in comic book movies as much as the part of society that I'm in, I guess.
And there's always a danger that if that part of the society fails in a little bit,
right,
we will rise up and tell them they could never do it again. Rest in peace, Black Catwoman.
Oh, Barry.
Come on now. A little bit? That movie failed a lot bit. But
right.
Your point
so
is
Black, Black Panther's...
I mean, yeah, it's bad, but like... And we won't get into other bad superhero movies. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But no, I mean, Black Panther is... It's the story, I think, of the first couple months of the year. And it's... Ryan Coogler's really good, guys. I think we all know that by now. And I think it's going to be fun. So there's that.
Yeah.
Black Panther.
Elektra got a sequel is what I'm saying. My first movie is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It doesn't come out until next December. It is Sony's animated Miles Morales movie written by Chris Lord. It is looking amazing in the one trailer that they've shown for it. They're hinting at an adult Peter Parker who is coexisting with Miles Morales, but also Miles Morales' origin story, which is that he takes over for a dead child, Peter Parker, which means the subtitle is Trumpeting Multiple Spider-Men, which is a really smart way to have your IP but be unable to eat the live-action version of it because Marvel's using it right now. I think it's going to be really smart. It looks really good in terms of cinematic animation. I have no idea what the plot is, but if it's anything like the Spider-Verse that showed up in the comics, we're going to see some of my favorite iterations of Spider-Man. And if you know my particular love of Spider-Man and Spider-Women, if you know my particular love of these variants, you will know that Into the Spider-Verse was going to be on my list. Let's circle back. Joanna, pick another one of your... four remaining picks.
Come on now. I have two words for you. Drew Goddard. the man who wrote on some of my all-time favorite TV shows, Buffy, Alias, Lost, who wrote and directed Cabin in the Woods, who wrote The Martian, who is just a tremendous, tremendous person.
Who's the reason why Daredevil Season 1 was good.
Yeah. Is making a movie with a great title, Bad Times at the El Royale. And it's a sort of like locked room or contained action film set at a motel, like a rundown motel, I believe, with Chris Hemsworth, Jeff Bridges, and Cynthia Erivo, who is this great Broadway musical actress who is just going to be incredible. I know it. So I have really high hopes for this. It's sort of like, it's like free, I'm imagining Free Fire, but a little bit more South by Southwesty. I don't know how to describe it. How can you get more South by Southwesty than Free Fire? Okay, let me narrow it down. The last thing I'll say is this. Drew Goddard was the person who saw the comedic potential for Chris Hemsworth before Marvel did, right? Like, Chris Hemsworth in Cabin in the Woods is hilarious. And then Marvel's like, let's make him serious. And then they're like, oh, wait, let's just do what Drew Goddard did in the first place and do that instead. So, yeah, Bad Times at the El Royale. I have high hopes for this. I guess I want to see, like, smart shooty movies, smart crime movies. That's what I want to see. Smart
shooty movies.
Smart fun shooty movies.
I love a good shooty movie.
Right? Who doesn't love a shooty movie?
Neil, your second most anticipated film of 2018.
Oh, speaking of shooty movies, you guys have heard of the movie called The Raid, correct?
I have.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent film. It was followed up by a sequel called The Raid 2, both directed by a gentleman named Gareth Evans, not to be confused with Gareth Edwards, who directed Rogue One. They are my two favorite Gareths, by far, that I've ever met. Actually, I would take them over any of the Garretts that I've ever met. Anyway.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to try to find a better Gareth. Go on.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Maybe David Bowie from Labyrinth.
He's Jared.
Oh, that's Jared. What about the sidekick from The Office?
Yeah.
Damn it.
No. Can't. No. No. These two directors are great. Anyway, so we also loved all over Dan Stevens last year, Legion Season 1, which, spoiler alert, is going to come up when we talk about TV shows again. So he is making an action movie with Dan Stevens. And
I heard that Dan Stevens on a podcast, No Surprise, the Empire podcast, he could not talk about this movie at all.
Yeah,
like, under some strict... They're not allowed to. They're not allowed to talk about it the same way like Star Wars people are not allowed to talk about their movies. You know,
the log line of this movie, the most that I have been able to find about it is that it's a quote period thriller about a man who travels to a remote island to save his sister from the clutches of a maniacal cult. So it's about to be some weird shit. And Dan Stevens is going to be very heroic and in the jungle, and I'm sure very shirtless
or evil.
I don't know.
He can do both on a dime.
Martin Sheen's also in it, so I'm assuming Martin Sheen's going to be evil.
Or heroic. I've seen The West Wing.
But I expect it to be extremely bloody, extremely sweaty, and awesome. I can't wait. I'm ready. Bring it on. Bring on more Gareth Evans movies. I love that guy.
What about Gareth Abraham, a Welsh former footballer? All these Gareths are like Welsh or British footballers. There's a lot of rugby and British.
Yeah, Gareth Evans is a Welsh guy who makes movies in Indonesia.
Yeah.
We need Gareth to like blow up in South LA next year or something and repopulate the Gareths.
Yeah. Break it out of Wales, man. I say this as a Welsh person. No,
that is the worst phrase to hashtag out of this entire episode. Repopulate the Garretts. Breaking out of Wales is awesome. Hashtag breaking out of Wales. I wish somebody was.
Fall on your way out of Wales.
Don't fall on your way out of Wales.
All right, Dave, what's your second?
My second most anticipated film of 2018 is just based on levels of anticipation. The third Cloverfield movie. We don't know what it's called. It was supposed to come out in February. This week they pushed it back to April 20th, I think. It used to be called God Particle. and some scientists accidentally made the Earth disappear, presumably into another dimension, because that's how particle accelerators work. We don't know if that's about it anymore. It's been years in the making. I know nothing about it, but my hope for the Cloverfield franchise is that it gives basically unknown, very unique directors the chance to play in a sci-fi sandbox for a while and only have to tangentially connect it to whatever a Cloverfield movie is. We don't even know what it is. We only have two. We only have a line. 2 points make a line. We get another point here. We can start to map out the 3D space of a Cloverfield universe. What is it? I don't know. Let's figure out in April.
Monsters.
Happy 420.
Is it a backdoor lead up to the Get Schwifty episode of Rick and Morty, where it's about scientists that think they made the world disappear, but really it was giant heads in the sky?
I would be interesting if it did involve giant heads in the sky and they were just holding it because they saw that Rick and Morty episode and they're like, ah, we could give some space. Yeah. Who knows what it is?
I'm taking it to J. a dumb Abrams. Place. I'm sure the movie will be smarter than that.
J.J. Abrams has his calendar full with a lot of stuff this year working on it. So I'm sure they're finishing up Cloverfield 3, whatever it's called. And we'll see it magically on a trailer to something. You know what? If I were to attach a mystery trailer to something that everybody was going to see in February, I'd attach it to Black Panther. Joanna, why don't you cheat for two entries?
Well, listen, one of these things is on here to make Neil go, huh? So I'm going to say, hey, who doesn't want a movie by Duncan Jones who made Moon called Mute? Right, Neil?
Yes.
Why would anyone hesitate to want to see that?
People are going to love Mute, assuming it exists. This is one of those things to go, huh? Because as I was noticing, it's a movie that has been on the most anticipated movies of X year for like three straight years. It's a movie that is probably one of the longer gestating projects in the history of human history. What my huh is more, huh, that's still a thing. Interesting. They're actually going to make that. So apparently they've made it, and Netflix is going to release it, which I think is really fascinating.
It's Alexander Skarsgård, Paul Rudd, Justin Theroux. A mute bartender goes up against the city's gangsters in an effort to find out what happened to his missing partner. Cheat entry number two is, I would be remiss if I did not mention the new film by Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight, my favorite film of 2016. His movie is called If Beale Street Could Talk. It's about a young woman who has to clear her baby daddy of a sexual assault crime he did not commit. The idea of someone clearing a man of a sexual assault crime he did not commit makes me go, ooh. But then if it were anyone other than Barry Jenkins doing it. But Barry Jenkins, like, I trust that this is going to be very interesting and good. So If Beale Street Could Talk, Barry Jenkins.
Yeah, fun fact about that movie. I saw an interview with Barry Jenkins where he said that he wrote If Beale Street Could Talk right around the same, in that same summer that he wrote Moonlight, which is really fascinating because, you know, from a tonal standpoint, I wonder how like Moonlight it can be, just like emotionally. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm with you on that one.
All right, sorry. Those are my two cheaty entries.
Yeah, how dare you pick more than... How dare you be anticipating more than two things? now we're going to pivot to television shows of 2018. Since we don't have Game of Thrones, we each pick other...
Really quickly, just for the Game of Thrones listeners, If Beale Street Could Talk has Pedro Pascal and Ed Skrein both... Game of Thrones alums in the cast, so.
Ooh, and there's a Gwendolyn Christie movie. Hold on.
Oh, no. Dave's going to kill me. Sorry, Dave.
No. I was just writing about it the other day, where I was like, oh, man, Gwendolyn Christie's in that. I don't know. Now I don't remember what it was.
I was pausing for more content, but I will not pause for more waiting.
Plow ahead. Plow ahead, my friend.
Most anticipated TV shows of 2018. I will go first. Because I think mine's coming up pretty soon. Yes, January 22nd, Steven Soderbergh has done something called Mosaic. So it's going to be on HBO. Sharon Stone plays the famous author of a children's book who disappears and is presumed dead. I don't exactly know what's up with this, but A, it's Steven Soderbergh, and then B, they're going to air all 6 episodes in 1 week. So it starts on January 22nd and concludes on that Friday. And then there's apparently also going to be some sort of app element to the show. And usually all those things would make me roll my eyes. But if this is how Steven Soderbergh wants to do HBO money, I am all in to see this attempt. And apparently Sharon Stone and Paul Rubens are very good in it. And I had no idea I wanted to see good Paul Rubens again, but I'm in.
I love the idea of like HBO giving Steven Soderbergh a bunch of money and him putting it in like a blender and like blending it up and then like walking outside with his iPhone and coming back like a day later, no one's heard from him. And he's like, oh, got it. Got the whole show right here on my phone.
Yep. We're going to air it in a week so it lines up with the app. Is that cool with everybody? All right. So Mosaic, let's all figure out if it's worthwhile. But it's always good to Soderbergh. Joanna?
Sure. I'm going to pick one TV show based on the cast alone. And that is an NBC series, I believe it's NBC, called Good Girls.
Yeah, it's NBC.
And it stars my favorite, Mae Whitman, and also Retta from Parks and Recreation and Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, and Matthew Lillard, who I really love, so get on board with him. And it's about three suburban women who are having a hard time to make ends meet. They decide to pull off an unlikely heist. Whoa, it's another heist movie! By robbing a supermarket, only to discover they're in for more than they bargained. Their successful robbery attracts the attention of the store manager after he recognizes one of the women. So, basically, it's Ocean's 8, but like 3 people and a TV show.
It's Ocean's 3.
Ocean's 3.
That sounds like a TV show that has a weird twist in episode 3 that turns it into a TV show, and I'm really interested in that because, like, that's the plot of a movie you just described.
I know.
Interesting. I wonder what happens. Do they kill him? The aliens pick him up? Got to figure it out. Good Girls.
Aliens.
It's mid-season, right?
Yeah, it's mid-season.
Mid-season.
Well, actually, right. It's February. So February.
Oh, yeah.
Which is mid-season. All right. Next.
Neil.
Oh, yes, me. Guys, I took the easy road on this question. Because this is the last thing I thought about before we recorded. But I am legitimately excited about both of these things, mostly because I don't know anything about them, but I really enjoyed the first season. So the first one is Jessica Jones season 2, which is due out in April? April? Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
It feels kind of... I'll
look it up, but you keep going.
Anyway, so, you know, I think we've been sort of down on the Netflix Marvel stuff over the last couple series. I blame Iron Fist entirely. but watching The Defenders, which I thought was okay, I remembered how much fun Jessica Jones is as a character to spend time with. She's an absolute train wreck, and I really enjoy her. I really enjoy sort of the ancillary cast of that. And I think Jessica Jones season 2 is going to be kind of fun. Isn't that purple guy coming back for some stuff, right?
I mean, he's a laugh
somehow.
Of it, so yeah.
Yeah. So like I said, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I'm here for it. I'm here for Jessica Jones season 2. I'm ready to like full on enjoy a Netflix Marvel series again.
Make
and it is March
again. Yeah.
March 8th, Jessica Jones season 2 will hit.
I was way off.
Not that off.
Not that far off.
A month off.
Well, yeah, considering you said Mute was going to come out 3 years ago, you're getting there. Neil, why don't you keep it rolling with your second pick?
So my other one's Legion, which also doesn't come out for a while. Right? This is like March, April. Yeah. I don't know.
You do the thing again, and I'll do the thing again.
Anyway, so I've expressed my love of Dan Stevens. Sure. He's very, very handsome and actually a pretty good actor. But Aubrey Plaza and Jemaine Clement, like where that season ended is kind of where I wish the whole thing would have started, but also we got some really good stuff to get us there. So super fun. Now that we're sort of outside some of the mystery box stuff of the first season of Legion, I think it's going to be really interesting, and I kind of can't wait to dig into it and see what happens.
Something that's really fascinating that happened in November is the actor who they had cast to play the Shadow King, who was the villain in season one. Please forgive me for butchering his name, Saeed Taghmawi, who was in Wonder Woman, was cast, and then he has left the project and has been recast, but they won't say with whom. So that happened in November. So I don't know what's happening with Legion season two.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still coming, but like that's kind of.
Yeah, except that I know that the first episode is done. Like I know that. So
no, I'm not saying it's
weird.
Not coming. I'm not saying it's not coming. I'm just saying
it's interesting that they had to make a change so late in the game. Yes. Yeah. So really fascinating to see what happens on Legion.
Well, like since the Shadow King doesn't have to manifest as someone who looks like Amal Farouk, the character, like, you know, they didn't need someone who looked like that in the first season. Like they could do many episodes without anyone who looks like that. But like, I don't know. Anyway. Curious, but I am also excited. I love Legion season one. I feel like season two has a potential to the Fargo seasons I would say had diminishing returns, so there's a possibility that Legion will have diminishing returns, or it's possible they will have figured out what makes it really good and ironed out a few of the kinks that there were in the first season.
Wait, you like Fargo season one better than Fargo season two?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I like Fargo season two better than
I like
season
Fargo season
one.
Two a lot, but I like Fargo season one even better.
I think I might like Fargo season two the best of all of them.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's do a Fargo cast someday. But for now, do you want me to go, Dave?
Someday. Yeah.
All right.
Do it.
I'm here with my trademark snooty pick, which is Babylon Berlin, which is a 2-season, 16-part German language drama hitting your Netflix queue at the end of the month. It comes out, I think, January 21st or something like that. Both seasons at once. This is like a huge gamble that Netflix is taking. You know, Netflix is trying to do more and more like foreign language programming. And this is sort of like a big gamble. It's directed by Tom Twyker, who did Run Lola Run, Perfume, Kill Out, Atlas, Sense8. And it's set in the hedonistic days of the 20s and 30s Weimar Germany. So think of Cabaret, right? And it's supposed to be like super weird and sexy and fetishistic and period and amazing. And Tom Tykwer is super, super weird, great director. So
yeah.
I'm really excited for that. For the potential.
Remember that movie he did, the Perfume movie?
Yeah, I listed it.
Oh, great. Great stuff.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I really like that movie.
Yeah, but it's super weird. I thought you were like, hey, remember how Duncan Jones did Warcraft, Joanna? Did you think you could get away with just not mentioning that? Yeah.
Guys, it's been a week since we did this podcast thing. I'm just getting my feet back here.
And the last show we have is one that I knew Dave was going to mention, so I didn't mention it. So, Dave, what is it?
It's Castle Rock, which will be coming from Hulu at some point. It's the Stephen King Interconnected Universe series. It's also from Bad Robot, of my beloved anticipated Cloverfield 3. Andre Holland of Moonlight plays a character who comes home to Castle Rock to represent a prison inmate who will be played by Bill Skarsgård, who is not playing Pennywise. He's playing this prison inmate from Shawshank Prison. And then who knows what else happens in this series that is kind of promising to connect Stephen King's literary universe into some sort of plot. We thought maybe it could be an anthology series at some point, but it seems not. It seems like it's going to be a something. Who knows what, though? Hulu will at some point, probably after July.
Yay, Castle Rock!
Yay, Castle Rock!
Stephen King, we did an episode about him last year. You should go back and listen to it if you haven't.
Or not.
We did. And then...
I seem to recall a lot of Stephen King fans were angry that we, like, kind of... I will concede this to the angry Stephen King fans. We bit off a little bit more than we could chew. We should maybe, if we do a Stephen King episode again, I suggest we narrow our focus to, like, a decade of Stephen King or something like that.
Stephen King, he's a tough nut to crack.
He's a little too prolific. But we might be taking an off-season tour to another prolific genre author sometime soon.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yes. We could piss off a whole other group of people, but those people will use much longer words to tell us how dumb we are, I'm guessing.
I've been on that author's train since I was a little kid, so I will fight people over that one.
Oh, yeah.
If necessary, I will fight people.
Train is an interesting word choice there. Just going to leave that hint there. That's it.
Interesting. We'll see if anybody gets it off of our obscure hinting. But that will not be next week. Neil, what do we have coming up next week on the off-season tour?
Well, guys, I don't know if you've heard about Black Mirror.
What?
Yeah, you've heard about it. We did an episode about Black Mirror last time they did a new season. And if I remember, it went over pretty well because Black Mirror is awesome. And I've been hearing many, many things about the new season of Black Mirror, season 4, which is currently on Netflix. I've not had a chance to watch it yet. but I will be before we record next week, and we're going to talk about Black Mirror. It's going to be hopefully very good. We're going to hang DJs. We're going to be metalheads. I can't remember the rest of the episode titles because, like I said, haven't watched
it yet.
It'd
be so funny if Metalhead was actually about metalheads. Neil, you're going to enjoy that comment when you watch Metalhead.
Nice.
Isn't Metalhead like very...
It's the David
Lynch.
Slade one.
Oh, well, I know, but isn't it Lynchian? Never mind. Don't tell me. I'll find out.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. It's Black Mirror season 4 currently on Netflix. Everybody can get in on the action. You got a week to ingest it before we talk about it next week.
Most of you who are astute pop culture people have probably already watched it. We were taking a vacation, apparently.
That's, you know, every once in a while we need a little vacation. Game of Thrones is taking a year to put stuff together. We just took 2 weeks where we didn't put out a podcast, but we're back and we'll be here for most weeks in this 2018. Guys, tell them where they can find you elsewhere online. Let's start with Neil Miller.
Yes, you can get me over at the filmschoolrejects.com website where I have resolved to, I don't know, writing more. We'll see. That I feel like I resolve to that every year and it never works out. But trust this, the things that are on there, I approved those pitches. You can also follow me on Twitter at Rejects, where I will be focusing on the signal and not the noise. And be sure to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. We're going to tweet out other things. And if you have Black Mirror thoughts, questions, comments, I'm sure you do, because this show's got all sort of density. Email those to stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Joanna Robinson.
By the time you hear this, it will already have happened. I will be at TCA's.
God. I thought you're going to be like, I was fired.
I will be dead.
I'm dead. No, I was just trying to think when this comes out, but I realized that it's coming out. After I will be at TCA, which is starting tomorrow. But you, never mind. You're going to hear this in the future. It's going to be great. So you can follow along. I'll be like, you know, just on Twitter, churning out some TV observations for what's to come in the next year. It's great that we record this podcast before I went there. And I should say, while I have you all here.
Well, you should give out your Twitter handle if you're going to say you're going to be tweeting cool stuff out.
It's Edge Wrote This. Thank you. The other Twitter thing I want to draw your attention to is the result of our great debate poll.
Oh, yeah.
The winner for TV was The Handmaid's Tale.
And, fair.
Which was the listener write-in, right?
Yep. And the listeners won.
The winner for film was Get Out, which I think was also the listener write-in. So good job, listeners. Turns out you know what our listeners like. And these were the defining bleak dystopian pop culture things that we enjoyed in 2017.
What's interesting is these were probably the closest races we've had so far, but it was really just a two selection race. Like, for a movie, it was Get Out and Wonder Woman were fairly close, and for TV, it was Handmaid's Tale and Game of Thrones. Like, the other four candidates got just wiped off the board.
Oh my god, my movie got trounced.
Poor Lady Bird. She's had so much happen.
Poor Lady Bird. All right.
Cool. And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find this podcast, my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, at fightinginthewarroom.com. And until next time, don't fall down.
I was going to say hashtag don't fall down 2018, but it's your phrase, so I guess I can't be mad at you saying.
Well, it's everybody's goal now. Just don't fall down. from our family at Stormroom Spoilers to you, the listeners, don't fall down.
Is there a don't fall down song that's going to start playing right about now?
I don't know if I could find one. Fall
down. No, I won't
fall
down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't
fall
down. No, I'll stand my ground. Won't be
falling down.
And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my
fall
down.
Fall.
Hey!